January 19th, 2003, Toronto to Manhattan, and Bob is going to be talking with Pat. Here he is.
Hello, Pat.
Hello, Bob.
Yes, Pat, how are you?
Good, how are you? Pleasure to meet you.
I'm inside you. You're inside me right now.
I guess I am, aren't I?
Yep.
Yeah. How are you?
Fine.
Good, good. I got a few questions for you.
All right.
One is, I'd like to know if you could elaborate more on the particle accelerator or the Tesla's death ray.
Tesla's death ray?
Yes.
Yeah.
Are you familiar with it?
Well, I spoke to Tesla through a medium several times. One medium, he came through and he said, "What happened to my particle beam? My particle death ray? Why isn't anybody doing it?" So that was about February 2000, and I assume it has not been invented yet. I checked with the other medium, which was more reliable, on whether I had spoken to Tesla through the first medium, and the second medium, the more reliable one, said, yes, you did, but it was slightly filtered through the personality of the person doing the channeling.
No kidding.
Yeah, and... But in general, that was Tesla, and so I said, so we could talk to Tesla through that guy, knowing he's biasing it slightly, and the other better medium said yes. I preferred the better medium, but they cost too much. So the other guy, though, he came by, was it a few months later or a year later? It was in March. He had an art show in New York, and he fell off his ladder that he was putting the paintings up and cracked his ankle, and then he had to go to the hospital, and he got infected, and I think he got it amputated. So I never had a chance to talk to him again.
Hmm.
He's a well-known painter in the alternative culture. Paul Laffoley is his name. And he had spoken at the disinfo.com conference in New York in February 2000, and then the next day, in the room that Tesla lived in, his last years in New York City, in that room, this Paul Laffoley had really researched Tesla, he did the channeling of Tesla. And he set up the furniture in the room exactly the way it was for Tesla, his last years there, which was like, I don't know, 1934 to 43 or something. So, okay, now the more reliable medium says that the military is now, since the 80s, they started going into Tesla's papers and knowledge, which have been shelved for 40 years, and they're sort of more able to understand them, and so they're developing stuff. Now, I don't know what they've actually developed, and I didn't get a chance to, I could ask that the next session I have, but I haven't had a session in a while. But the Philadelphia experiment accident scared the American military, and they shelved the Tesla kind of information that they were stumbling through for 40 years. And now they feel confident and they're working on it. But I don't know what they've produced. All I know is that the digital electronic TV environment obsolesced any death ray or particle beam that any military could come up with. It's more devastating than any military weapon.
Yes, yeah. So at this point, they don't think, you don't believe that they're continuing with building it?
Oh, I think they are. They're trying to do something. How far they got, I don't know.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I didn't check that. I'm not in the military. I don't pay that much attention to what the military does because they're so obsolete now.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
You understand that the software environment is the real military operation.
Yeah.
You know, that's what's warring on the hearts and minds and spirits of humans more than any military war. That's why wars are fought in the backyards of the world. Korea, Vietnam, Grenada, Panama, Iraq, you know, these are the backyards of the world.
Wow.
And everybody, including Iraqis, is inside the TV vortex. We're all in another vortex. We're all in orbit.
So how do we get out?
Ah, yeah. Well, you got any ideas?
No.
No, we.
I'll let you know, though.
Yeah. No. Well, what we get out by? Well, I used to say years ago on the radio show that we don't provide any variety of content to any opinion polls or news organizations or talk shows you're on, whenever you get to be broadcast, you just yell, turn it off, and say that statement applies to all events, all issues, all problems. And you give the Chinese water torture back to them. Give them no content.
Yeah.
Just keep pointing the finger. You are doing it. This is what Baudrillard, you ever heard of Baudrillard did?
No.
Jean Baudrillard, he wrote about this in the 80s and 90s. Basically, carrying on McLuhan's work, McLuhan had the genius of saying, in the middle of a so-called information society, say, there's no content, there's no information, there's just the effect of forms on us. So he bypassed it that way. So a political way of turning it off would be to bug the broadcasters as much as possible, providing no content. Now, if we fail to do that, it still is not a problem. I mean, there's nothing unpleasurable about the information environment if you find what you like on it. The thing is, what are you going to say to the old institutions and the coming institutions that your kids go through in relation to it? It's a problem of definition and of describing what the issues are. We may never have to turn it off because, you know, the bombardment of information creates massive public indifference. And if you're of an anarchistic bent, I'm not saying that I am, but if you are, then the indifference that the media overload generates in people is unintentional by the manufacturers of the media environment. They attempt to, as an aside, they attempt to condition people. But the massive indifference they create allows no program that they want to, the Big Brother wants to generate, to have any carrying power because people are too turned off to any directional element in the media.
Yeah.
So a service. So back to the anarchists. The anarchists wanted people not to be fooled by state, local, propagandic elements that set up organizations. We have created the most anarchistic, highest decibels of consciousness in the media environment by the general indifference in the public. And therefore, no old forms of propaganda work. That's why Bush is never going to have a war regardless of what anybody thinks. They have to. They can't rely on the public. The public isn't even there anymore. The many publics.
Yeah.
So we have services and disservices in this situation. So the great thing I hope is that new sources of power energy or hardware energy would get us out of the concentration camp we're in software-wise under media overload, media invasion, media parasitism. If we have new forms of energy, then people can organize themselves in a more decentralized manner, practically.
Well, it still seems like the media has quite a bit of control over what we're doing. Like, for
okay,
example,
let's just hold that statement. It control. What does the media do? Basically, they look for information in the New York Times, and then it goes all over the place. But they have to have people input. There is no control of people. They're
mm-hmm.
always putting on people by wearing them, by saying there's polls, having inputs. Having talk shows. What they, the media, don't control us. We don't control them. The media has a life of its own. So I would restate your position as it's not them controlling us or us being controlled or us controlling them. The media itself has a life of its own, which I call the Android meme.
Hmm.
Now that controls, that is a claustrophobic or a has all kinds of different effects on people. So but that can be bypassed if it's clarified to people what's going on.
Well, what kind of effects can that have on people?
That the Android meme effect, I'm just saying?
Yeah.
I think that you create mental and emotional and physical instabilities, neuroses, ecstasies, that we've extreme behavior beyond any culture we've ever had before, and how we react to that is a problem for people. I mean, well, a simple cliche is that everybody is lonely or alienated or isolated.
Mm-hmm.
They don't feel there's a public space where people can get together. That's a common phenomenon through most of this 20th century. But the one of the big effects would be it creates drug addiction in so many ways, or fetishization. Extreme obsession, obsessive compulsive things in all kinds of area, including fads and hobbies. So it creates a great narcissism, a great solipsism, and yet, if you're not suffering under that right now, you can have a lot of pleasure, a lot of fun with the information and entertainment media you consume.
Yeah.
So my overall term for that is that what was considered a problem, paranoid, schizophrenic kind of problems in the West, I say the media is imitating that, coming alive and miming paranoia and schizophrenia. So therefore, if you are schizophrenic right now, you also have to deal with the schizophrenia of the Android meme, which has possessed you, so the two together become quadrophenia. So our citizens are engaged in quadrophenia. Now, I wouldn't say that's bad if one could have the form to explain to them what they're going through, because no previous psychology, sociologies can handle these things. So it then forces people, the good thing, it forces people to look into new, different areas of knowledge and experience that they never would have thought of before.
Mm-hmm.
So you see, the interesting thing now is that we have a problem, but the solution is within the problem.
Mm-hmm. Now, I've heard a lot of things about just the media or things that have been put on television in general that tend to hypnotize the public. I wonder if you could elaborate further on that and tell us why only some people can be hypnotized.
Right. Are you talking about subliminal embeds?
Yes, I am.
Okay, well, that was attempted in the 50s, and it was found later not to be viable. It didn't really happen, and nothing was carried on. So that was a short-lived idea. But what the media managers or propagandists or big sisters, big brothers realize is that you don't have to force people to pay attention to the content that you're putting out. You just have to keep the media going, and people will be distracted by it if you try to keep them away from old political activities. So the television itself is an ironic pleasure mechanism that serves propagandic negative purposes willy-nilly regardless of what's on it. And then, by default, you keep your ads on there, and they're not meant to be noticed. They're not meant to be programmed, but they go into the distracted mind's brain and reminds them of stuff when they walk out and walk around and consume. But even that, as McLuhan said, Madison Avenue couldn't condition a mouse. There's no conditioning needed to put on you for you to get the technologies you acquire to exist. You have to have a telephone. Now it's a cell phone. You have to have a radio, TV. You have to have a car.
Yeah.
Nobody's going to. You got to get them regardless. They're guaranteed environments.
Yeah. So, and do you think the chip is next or what?
Yeah. Well, the chip is here, but the chip will come, and whether it goes into people, inside brains and hands, that may not be a problem for later generations who don't have the same kind of identity or separating psychology that would prevent them from feeling comfortable with it. You could say that language, like Burroughs did, is a virus. It's a chip. The chip is just a continuation of the media you use being inside you. So people are always conditioned by their media, by the terms, the tools, both communication and practical tools that tribes use. These things, the only way one gets free of them is to take the time to perceive around them, which requires an undistracted mind. I mean, that's traditionally what monasteries and secret schools did. They took a person out of society and gave them the opportunity to look at the patterns of their society without too many distractions. So, you know, they wouldn't eat much, they wouldn't have to work much, they would be given a state of quietism. How do you get the audience to see, the regular citizens or anybody to see what's happening now is the issue. You really can't get access to people to put them into the quietest state of brain so they can see what's going on around. There are no institutions that know how to deal with the present stuff to do that. They just offer the old quietist remedies. But going back to to hypnosis. Now, here's what's really interesting. Pavlov said, you've heard of Pavlov?
Yeah.
The conditioner. He said, you know, 80 years ago, that people can be conditioned as long as they feel they're getting something out of it. Once they find out that there was a lie in the conditioning, or the conditioning does not give them what they thought they were getting, they can't be conditioned again. So with the media bombardment, because Pavlov comes out of the radio era, and that whole attempt by the Nazis and the communists and British intelligence did what they thought was needed, brainwashing through radio, that was superseded by the effects of television and later the computer and satellite and the digital. So people have been mutated so many times in their attitudes that we've come to the situation now that the general need to have a new sensation to counter the general emptiness and boredom of the communication situation, because the communication situation is not communicating to people, it's communicating among itself, among the parts of the Android meme,
mm-hmm.
one medium to another, and they feed off each other. As a human, it gets apathetic in relation to that. They do cry out for an event. They cry out for the ironic, exaggerated event, for example, OJ, the death of Diana. These things that get massive coverage and go on and seem to be an irrational expression by the mass mind of an obsessive quality. That is the way that the mass mind, the mass citizen, satirizes the powers, so-called powers of mass communication. They overemphasize a sort of an absurd event to the max. And that forces the Big Brother controllers to eat crow or to put up with it and look silly. And it's a kind of satire by people back on the media that's around them. So this is due to the public not being hypnotized unconsciously. They consensually create a mass hypnosis, temporary extreme exuberance, and it comes and it goes. And in the retrospective, it's like, what happened? What was that all about? That is a collective satire on anybody who thinks they're controlling the population. So the real hypnosis has always been in the form, not the content. But the forms have so merged now, the forms of media, that we have one medium, it's one node, and it's inside all of us, and it's on a quantum level of actuality.
Wow.
So the traditional, this was McLuhan's big point, the traditional ideas, objections to being propagandized and being conditioned, he said, was a projection from old 19th century attitudes and did not apply after 1960.
Who do you think is responsible? For example, in the North American press, was turning to a blind eye to the vote scandal for Bush. It was actually the British press who uncovered the situation between Jeb Bush and their help from the state of Texas to alter
right.
the final vote.
Yeah.
Like, why would they turn a blind eye to that? And then I think it was Washington Post who finally, once the British press brought it up, the Washington Post went, oh, okay, and covered it for a couple days, and then it disappeared. Who do you think is the one kind of holding the poker back there, you know?
Okay, so taking that issue about, first you were saying, why did the media not pursue it, or why did the public not care? Which way were you saying it?
Well, it's probably the same answer. I guess I'd like to see your swing on both
okay.
sides of it.
First of all, I predicted in the late 90s there couldn't be an election by the year 2000 because politics, the White House, had been so miniaturized, put marginalized and so irrelevant to the controlling features in people's lives, and the controlling features are the polls and the consumption of what you have to do today to invest your money and where to move it, and then also those everybody else has to work within the environments. So you have a big super audience working for itself. There's no control on it. So you got this old institution called the White House and democracy, which are puny 19th century apparatuses based on people with private points of view that are held for a long range of time. Nobody has a private point of view. Nobody holds these things for very long. It's like a bunch of animals from the 19th century trying to have consensus, a bunch of monkeys, while around them buzz the quark particles of actual humans traveling through the circuits of information. So therefore, the White House was a joke for many years. You could say it began with Reagan. It was irrelevant as an institution, and it led to, you know, the satirical events around Clinton's final years. So there could be no election after Y2K, which was supposed to be the end of it all. So you had, on top of that, though, when you have a White House, a bureaucratic institution that Congress is part of, that industrial literate institution, it is puny. But what is not puny is a centralized icon for the whole world, a mirror back to us, and that's the role of the president. So the president has the Teflon effect, that image, not the person, but the image, has a Teflon effect. So that image was not able to exist in the normal communicatory rules up till the year 2000. There was no need for any communication to happen through the media anymore. No need for a presidential icon. So you didn't need the presidential icon, so you had an election that was not going to happen, and you had a pre-programmed winner of a person who met that public need of non-communicatory abilities, one who didn't have anything to say, couldn't say it, and would be popular for that fact. That's Alfred E. Newman, George Bush, right?
Yeah.
Right? What?
Exactly.
You worry? So, and so what now? One could say, well, why Bush? I mean, why didn't Pat here fulfill that need? What is interesting is that you still have old media, industrial structures, oil structures, and there's a battle now in between all these new and old media structures, who's going to be the image, a non-communicating image, for the 21st century, at least for the next while, until we get cold fusion and better energy.
Yeah.
So, so you put in this non-communicating guy, and the reason it is something from the old industrial structure is that where the White House was from. So let's say look at it this way. Because the communicatory icon the last 50 years was more important than the industrial structure that controlled the bureaucracy of Congress and White House, that rule. Once that is melted away, you're left with the industrial bureaucracy. So actually, you have the secret government is left holding the bag of the White House when the White House is obsolete. All right?
Yeah.
Now, the media doesn't like the image that Bush projects on the iconic level because he is dealing with the present, which obsolesces the media's need to have an icon. So the media are obsolesced, the industrial structure is obsolesced, and you're left with the audience running itself, but the problem today is it doesn't have an energy or icon to run itself.
Or watching the wrong show.
Right. And there's not going to be any show on TV. So in the gap, the industrial structure says, we better just keep looking busy, keep our institutions going, even though we're on the sidelines. And so they're carrying on making war. The oil companies are going on making drilling and exploration. And all this gets mixed up inside the events of September 11th. But what was the September 11th event? It was a bunch of cavemen, supposedly, knocking off the heart of the media empire.
Mm-hmm.
So the caveman aspect is where we're all at right now. We got a bunch of human beings who are indifferent to any forms of institutional control, any forms of icons, yet still need to cooperate. So there's a dilemma. What forms of shared information are we going to make? What form of media are we going to use to share? So right now the world's sitting in a flatline case.
Yeah.
There's nowhere to go. There's no way to consolidate everything. So in that frustration, you got tribal ethnic paranoia.
Yeah.
So I say the election was so irrelevant, so puny, that events led to it to being canceled. And if you cancel the media level of the media purpose of the election, the need to get a person who is going to communicate effectively within the media, you have and the media has gotten canceled. Therefore, there's no need for communication, and therefore the White House is not relevant. But when you want to keep the White House circulating reluctantly, as the media has to do to provide obsolete content, they have to focus on the secret government that was always there.
Mm-hmm.
And there it is.
Yeah.
But
still
it has no power.
Bag.
Bush has no power.
It's the figurehead.
For what?
For the states.
For the industrial structure.
Yes, yes.
You know, which is only one medium today, among many medium. People, you can live on, you know, Coke and chips and crap, as long as you're watching TV, because you have another body. You have your TV body, which is inside you. And that body needs to be fed. And if you're fed with enough imagery, enough radio, music, whatever, electronic entertainment, your needs to fill your physical body are diminished. So you got people addicted to feeding their TV body. You got others, more affluent, feeding their chip body, which is on the computer networks. And they're, you know, the standard image of the geek, the nerd. He's a guy who lives on Pop-Tarts or something for 3 days, right? While programming software. The diminished body, the physical body that's playing a side, marginalized role today, is due to the fact there's other bodies humans carry around themselves, carry on themselves like barnacles, or like the little stubs and earrings they put on their skin, or the tattoos.
Mm-hmm.
So that stuff needs to be consumed, and that TV or chip body is not concerned about anybody down in Washington or industrial structure. They're only concerned when their body has to drive a car or something, or to keep the heat.
Yeah.
So a proper perception of our situation is to see these different structures flowing in among each other, canceling each other out, with the population's needs determining the whole thing. And the population consists of more than one body, individually. That's the beginning of recognizing what they say on the media, our complex lives. You've heard that phrase?
Yeah.
You know, we don't live simple like the 50s, 60s, which was a very complex time in itself. Complexity has become a given, a cliche. Therefore, with the action always has moved somewhere else. And it's not complexity. It is recognizing the structures of the Android meme, which have possessed us.
Right, yeah.
And if you had a president, a prime minister, like Castro used to do when he came in, he still does it supposedly, when he came in, he would educate the people on what he thought the revolution was, what should be done. He was a president who communicated like an ongoing encounter group.
Right,
with the subject. You need a president or a national leader operating like that, describing, reminding people of where we're at, because people don't remember. They got so many environments they got to deal with. As soon as we finish talking here, you're going to go off and deal with all these other environments, and what we're talking about will sort of be put aside.
Yeah.
And that's natural. It's going to be eroded. But if you had someone who was just reminding people of what it was and correcting everybody else who tries to keep bringing up other issues, like even to speak up and respond to the president or prime minister and say, well, what about this? What about that? The president just has to say, well, you're using speech to talk to me. Speech is so puny compared to these other languages we use, which are all these other media. That would keep, depressurize all the sight and fury and hoopla that goes on in the media all the time on the level of being educated, because the hoopla continues because the chip and TV body need it.
Yeah.
Right? So the president should be someone on the sideline, not instituting any bureaucratic legislation. It should be like a poet defining the situation of the tribe, the situation of the dialect, the situation of the perception of the culture.
Yeah. That's it, like the shaman or the coach.
Right, the coach.
Yeah.
As a matter of fact, they say, McLuhan used to make an interesting point in the 70s. The reason sports took over so powerfully in the 70s, he said it was due to the instant replay. When the instant replay came in the late 60s, early 70s, it was that technology was perfectly suited for only television. There's no other use really for the replay. And what content could use a replay? Sports.
Yeah.
So televised football started around 1970. By the middle 70s, it's bigger than anything. And as Warhol once said, Andy Warhol, the artist was the hero in the 60s, but the athletes were the heroes in the 70s. Now, the other point was, because the same reason you had to have an icon in national politics called the president. Remember, Kennedy comes in, and he has a different relation to the public due to TV and the beginning of the obsession of the population with what the president thinks and is doing and his policies. This comes in with TV. It began with FDR and radio, but it really came in a new way with Kennedy. So you have the president as being this Teflon character floating around being the coach for the nation. So the society's games always reflect what the dynamics is going in daily life. And so a lot of attention went to the coach in football in the 70s and 80s. You had that Dallas coach, Tom somebody. You had all these various coaches that became icons, and it wasn't that way in the 40s and 50s, 30s, or 60s. You see what I'm saying?
Yes, I do.
So, yes, you need a coach, but the role of the president would be the intelligent coach, the one who supposedly is aware of all the societies, doesn't have any particular bias or axe to grind, but is properly defining the situation. Now, I've always claimed I'm that person when I was on the radio and in any other medium. And I still claim I am. So the thing is that I claim it as, since no one else can do it like I do it, then I have to do it. But once someone else can do it, then I don't have to do it anymore.
Yeah, yeah.
But the point is it's understanding what we need. And obviously, the reason kids supposedly aren't interested in politics and social issues the way their parents and teachers want them, is that they don't see anything being said to them by the coaches that resonates with the reality that they live in.
Yeah. Yeah, it's all based around what the coach wants everyone to think, no?
Well, yeah, that's the way it is. Another way to say this is the group tribal mind, which is the team and the players. As we started to get into satellite technology where an individual could float around the whole planet and the whole media complex, this superhumanization of the individual, which is actually symbolized by Walkmans, VCRs, answering machines, you're not controlled by the tribal pace of media as we were in the first half of the century.
Right.
So you weren't as oriented around, conditioned, hypnotized by the team. An expression of what everybody individually was becoming was the media reflection on the coach. So we're all coaches, and now, but when you say we need to listen to the coach, that's the top-down version of the tribal behavior.
Yeah.
But it doesn't work, and that is why coaches per se, presidents, CEOs, don't have the charisma that a coach should have, that the coach phenomenon has in all the population, because the population is all self-replicating coaches. If it's not said properly, the self-replicating coaches won't respond. So there's not a coach. So what did the coaches have to do with all that public pressure in the late 70s, early 80s? They had to become born-again Christians. They had to put on the public stereotype, archetype of America.
Yeah, they needed the wife, the kid, the dogs.
Yeah, they needed that.
Yeah.
And this shows a paranoia, an inadequacy, a panic about how media events have focused attention on them and they're not ready for it. And no institutions were ever ready. And the kids grow up seeing this, knowing it, and they look around for someone who can spell it out. And somebody who can spell out the 80s, 90s is someone who's rhyming, talking, not maintaining a point of view, and is dancing and hopping about, which is actually how people live. So
wow.
The rap stars take over.
Yeah. Wow. And then, it's, I've got a lot to think about here.
Yeah, well, what one does is you got sports, politics, education, business, all these activities. It's real simple. You just have to say, well, what's the common medium, the common tool that all society is using? Well, obviously today it's digital life, digital media or computer media, right?
Right.
So you look at the characteristics of the computer. You see, it's so different from a book, so different from a movie, so different from all previous media, and you isolate its characteristics. And then you say, these characteristics should show up in all the different institutions and functions in society. So I hop around from coaching to hockey to art to writing to business to anything, and I look for the common ground. I look for the common characteristics in those institutions that are reflected by the medium they're all using. That's all you have to do.
Yeah.
And to give an example, when television came in, you have to realize television is a live, simultaneous medium, not like a movie. You had to go to a place to see a movie.
Yeah.
And it wasn't simultaneous for the mass as radio was at the time. But television is different. It has all the senses pretty well in it. So it has a grainy quality, and it creates a beehive effect in society, if you really see what it does. So what shows up in the 50s? Beehive hairdos.
Yeah. Yeah. Coincidence?
What?
Coincidence?
Right.
Yeah.
And then not a coincidence, right. And then beehive music in the sense of rock. A totally different kind of music that if you played it in 1920, people would have shot you.
Yeah.
You know, because it just wouldn't have sounded to the sensibilities that were conditioned by the tools that society used. And so you have to expand the definition of tools. It's not just what you use to fix your car. It's the tools of communication, like we're using a telephone today with satellite hookups.
Yeah. And so it's all digital.
Hmm?
And it's all digital.
Right.
Yeah.
And so when you say you feel I give you something to think about, I'm just laying out a collage of your life, and if I'm honest, I tell you what's underlying it, so it shouldn't leave you confused.
No.
It should give you a way of handling what's going the confusion around you.
Just open the eyes a little bit, that's all.
And the ears.
Yes, of course.
Yeah. Because it's not just an eye phenomenon. It's just right now we're doing an ear phenomenon, and it's also electronic and digital. So we've extended our central nervous system, which means we are inside our central nervous systems.
Hmm. Yeah.
So we're particle accelerators right now.
Yeah, I guess we are, aren't we?
Yeah, on the satellite lines. See that now that you take physics, people go and they say, "Oh, I can't take physics. Too much math. Too much. I can't understand it." If you told them, physicists per se might not like this, that whatever physics is talking about is mirroring the medium of the time, then a person would have a way to be not bamboozled by the content of physics and have a little confidence about, okay, the physics is going to describe the environment we live in. So, what shows up in 1927? Quantum physics, indeterminacy, and all these things. They showed up inside the new radio environment. And radio was a non-visual, a simultaneous, an acoustic, and even tactile medium that created information overload immediately. So any news event was like the path of a particle in a particle accelerator, a trajectory that left traces. You could look at that and say, okay, physics has got to reflect that. And physics did come up with that. Now, what is the interesting thing, the cliche about physics in the 60s and 70s for the populace? Oh, they keep coming up finding new particles, right?
Yeah.
Now, what they were really doing was inventing new particles.
Hmm.
Because it was mirroring the new media-massaged news society that was even more fantastic than compared to the radio era, where news was constantly manufactured to keep the consumption of media going. And so the news event was an invented new particle every day, and so physics began to reflect that. And the news people had to come up with new news more and more as more people got involved in consuming the TV media.
Yeah.
So you can see how if you told the kids this in grade 10, they could not be intimidated. Now, this would be a threat to the institutions who need to hypnotize people. Now, here's another level of hypnosis, not just the hypnosis of politics, the hypnosis of education and institutions to mystify and complexify what they do and get grants for and get money for to do and research. The mystification must continue, like advertising, to keep the charisma up to get people to come and support them.
Yeah.
I mean, McLuhan came out and announced that television was way more dangerous than the atomic bomb. He announced that all the stuff I've just been saying, and he announced the medium is the message. This answers the clue to human science knowledge, social science knowledge, and it is a bigger factor in what our definition of matter is than anything that a scientist would invent. Now, that's pretty comprehensive to say that. And yet, the guy is not studied or understood in that way at all, and he's not even supported at the University of Toronto. So you have a great resistance to what's going on always. That's the human nature. Then you could say that a human being, we could celebrate the human's resistance to any new stuff as natural conservatory tendency because it slows down things. And if we actually didn't have that resistance, we would have disappeared ourselves with new technology so rapidly that one could make a case thank God for the stick in the mud to the conservatives, the stupid people who don't want to respond to the present.
Yeah.
All right?
Yeah.
And so that is the paradox of our condition. And the paradox of the Android Beans condition, so it's a quadridox.
Quadridox. Oh, wow.
So, I don't want to exhaust you, so let's shift to, let's go into a totally different topic, which might get your energy or whatever.
Sure. I did have a question for you about, I want to know if you know anything about rods.
You mean those UFO things, that what they're called?
Yeah, what are so-called rods.
Right.
Yes. There's a couple different theories on them. One, that they're launched by the Big Brother as some sort of probe, and the other is that they're some kind of living being that are in a subdimension or translucent being or some sort.
Right.
And can only be picked up on video. I have no idea if they can be picked up on film, but I've seen them on video.
Yeah, so have I. There's some great shows here in New York on the public access cable, and I've seen a lot of that stuff for years here. The thing is whatever answer I gave, what would it matter? Because for me to have an opinion or an information,
it's just an opinion.
It's just a human being's opinion.
Yeah.
And the Android meme will only feature maybe a show on UFOs every now and then, but it's only one of many kinds of shows it'll have, and it's only important when it's on, but then it must be shoved aside like a particle, a quark, and on to the next content. So it doesn't matter what I think, doesn't matter what you think, doesn't matter what the Android meme thinks. It ain't going to stay long enough to establish whether it was real or not.
Right.
That means that we're inside whatever fantastic effects we think UFOs will do to us. We're already living inside a UFO called the Android meme, which is this media convergence.
Right.
It is more fantastic than any extraterrestrial situation. Now, that's being said, I know a little bit about the extraterrestrial stuff, and I have opinions about what this and that is. Once we have qualified that it's relevant, but irrelevant on the mass particle accelerator level, between you and me, what do I think? I don't think the rods are anything particular, anything real. I don't believe it for some reason. I just don't feel it. What I seem to know is, or my sources, which could be not verifiable for your case. I mean, if you told me something, why should I believe it?
Right.
You know, I have to experience the same way as you. So, not demanding you to believe it, I will tell you that the contact with UFOs will be made when the UFO civilization that is organized to be the ambassadors for our contact establishment will be from the constellation Bootes, Boots, an umlaut over one of the O's. The star Arcturus is in it.
Yeah.
So I call them the Bootians, and the Bootians are going to leave a device on one of our space stations. And whatever astronaut, whoever finds it, it will just say, press here and talk. So you press and talk, and then there will be communication with something, the Bootians.
Hmm.
Now, I say that they're the ones making the crop circles. They do not cattle mutilate. The ones that do the cattle mutilations are from another intergalactic civilization, a lower form of life.
That's just the Greys, I understand.
No, forget those categories don't apply.
Okay.
It's not a paranoid scenario, but the ones doing the cattle mutilations are doing it for whatever particular cultural brain they have. They are fascinated by the cows, and they use the material for whatever the purpose is. I don't know what exactly it is. But the Bootians say they're not to be a problem. They're not a concern. The Bootians don't pay attention to them. They're like retards in relation to the mission of the Bootians, which is that they're the ones who establish contact. And it's very ecological when a new planet, new civilization contacts the extraterrestrial level outside of its normal frame of reference, and it's done very carefully.
Oh, that'll change a lot of things down here.
Ah, it'll change the medium of oil structure, maybe, the industrial structure.
Do you think we'll still be using oil at that time, by the time that happens?
I think it should happen in the next 10, 15 years, or maybe next year, even this year.
So hopefully around the same time.
But the thing is that the dilemma, here's the secret dilemma they had. basically, many people have seen them. Many UFOs have been seen, even more so in the 90s with video cameras. There's no doubt they're there. But how many civilizations were taping is another matter. But the one to remember, to focus on, is the Boudians, because they're the ones who are going to be responsible and deal with us, and we're going to deal with them. They've been monitoring us, but their dilemma was, if they came before the cataclysm, then they would be blamed for causing it. If they come after, they're blamed for not helping us.
Right.
Now, what was the cataclysm? The cataclysm wasn't nuclear war. It was the collapse of all the industrial political structures symbolized by the Berlin Wall going down.
Mm.
All right? The collapse of the Cold War. And they then can come after the Cold War, because if they had landed on the White House lawn or wherever during the Cold War, they would be asked to fight, their technology would be used, requested to help whatever team they landed on.
Exactly.
You know?
Yeah.
So they knew that they had to not land during the Cold War. They knew that if there was a really bad cataclysm, we'd be blamed, that we might blame them for not helping us before. So they basically were going to come after. So it happened in 1990. So they're supposed to show up now. It's been sort of mandated. And the crop circle spread in the 90s. The people catching them on videotape. And so it's not, you got 10 years or more of people, in a lot of ways, accepting the meme that there's life out there. But how they interact with us is still a mystery, and they're not, it's not that they're super controllers. They're not going to, they're as fascinated by what we live, the way we live in this, our situation, as we will by their situation.
Oh, I'm sure.
And therefore, they're not here to dominate us. But there is an unpredictability about how humans would react, and so they're trying to time it that way. And have you looked at the crop circles the past couple of years?
Yes, I have.
I mean, it's amazing. They just
fantastic.
Get more and more fantastic,
yeah.
Right? And incredible. It's like the best gallery stuff going, best art museum in terms of visuals. You've seen it. It's so fantastic and intricate. And what's interesting, their symbolism, what they're trying to do is see what we respond to, which patterns we make sense out of or gravitate towards.
Yeah.
Then they say, oh, that's what's significant to them. And then they have a beginning to start an alphabet, so to speak. It's
right.
Just like an
yeah.
anthropologist that comes to a tribe, doesn't know how they speak, they don't know him. They've got to find a point where they begin square one
and
they can match up, right?
Yeah, starting ground.
Right.
Yeah.
So we think these extraterrestrials are super intelligent and they know they can zap us, they got ESP on us. Not the case. We are as a mystery to them as they are to what they will be to us.
So it seems.
Yeah, and so they are being very careful about and taking their time to find out what we really think.
Yeah.
And they're doing it through the crop circles. That is them laying out their card deck. Okay, does this look like a, does this look like a bird to you, you know, or something? I don't know how anthropologists do it.
Yeah, yeah.
So we can look at it that way. So that's the way I like to think about it, or tell people about it, because it gets beyond the paranoia. It just looks as a practical matter.
Do you think that the crop circles could be some sort of response to, say, the Nazca lines, for example?
No. The crop circles are made by a device that they have that can remove gravity temporarily. So you remove the gravity from the stalks of wheat.
Yeah.
And then they'll fall over. And you can mold a shape as they fall over. And that's why they aren't broken.
Yeah.
You just remove the gravity and it just sort of, it just lays down. And that's, it has nothing to do with the Nazca lines. Nazca lines were, well, there's a million theories about what it was. I'll just say, no, it isn't. This is new stuff. Though I'll tell you this, is that the Boudians were the ones who altered us in 27,500 B.C. They took apes in Africa.
Yeah.
Not the line that became Cro-Magnon, not the Neanderthal line.
Yeah, I'm familiar with this.
Right, and they altered the wrist. This you may not know. They altered the wrist, and they altered our jaw. And the jaw altering, therefore, made us eat differently, therefore put a different chemical reaction to our brains. And the wrist action was to make our hands more flexible. That was a genetic alteration that altered, that brought in a subconscious. That, the effect of that was a subconscious, which created human emotion. and that was the effect on the Cro-Magnon man. And the if anybody was to listen to this, what I'm saying now for the next 100 years, here's the warning, or the secret, is that as genetic engineers figure out how to map and clone us, or whatever they're going to do to our body structure, they will never totally figure it out and understand what our bodies are made of until they acknowledge the genetic manipulation, genetic change that the Boudians did to us.
Yeah.
Once they understand that, then they can understand how the chemistry works better. Whatever distortion they're seeing in it that doesn't match whatever they thought should be there, that'll be the reason.
Hmm.
So there's some advice for the scientists next 100 years, because it's going to be about maybe 100 years before scientists will accept that,
yeah,
the idea we were altered.
That's great.
So okay, let's go to another area.
Sure. What else? What other questions do I have for you? Just an easy question for you, or maybe not an easy question. When you see a wheel spinning around,
yeah,
and it appears to go the other way,
right?
Why is that?
It's a good point, because what people don't realize is that our brains alter the sensory data that comes in. Have you ever heard of the point that the image, when it comes in the eyes, is turned upside down?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. There's obviously something in humans that is not being brain-panned on, blueprinted on, like a stencil. There's something in our cognitive, a kind of separateness from reality, that can alter reality. A simple metaphor is that when you eat food, if you eat vegetables, they go in green, it comes out a different color.
Yeah.
All right? So our insights alter what comes in. Output is not the same as input. So if you think of that in terms of brain perception, eyes, ears, and that, we alter. And that's why, you know, people can never totally agree, because they're always altering down to the most minute level of perception compared
right.
to each other. So if you accept the fact that we make perception as well as match, we match what everybody else sees, but we twist it also, then the spinning, if something is coming in and it flips, like you're saying, the spin, that's either caused by the cognitive altering principle, the making principle,
yeah,
which includes after image, and maybe that is, since spinning is such an archetypal movement in reality, the galaxy spin, reality, atoms, everything spins. And so when we take in sensory data, we put a spin on it with our own cognitive faculties. We alter it. So actually, if you spin a wheel, you're presenting to the brain the archetypal form, and it flips because it's showing to you what you do. We're all spin doctors in that sense.
Yeah.
So that's my immediate on-the-wing answer to that.
That pretty much sums it up.
So do you know why? I mean, what the, say, other people say why? You know, what's the...
I know, I just had that question off the top of my head that popped in earlier. I don't know why, but I figured I'd ask you.
Right, no, yeah, my instant theory is that spinning is such an accurate image of the way our bodies and so much of our body parts, as science found out, is. It's the archetypal movement in the universe, the spin,
yeah,
right? If you actually have a spin presented to you, then it will flip because your brain is looking at its own mirror and therefore includes the flipping action it normally does unconsciously.
Right. And so you see it.
Yeah, so
yeah.
you see it. And it's only in that case. The other interesting thing is, to show how TV is so different from a movie or a book, is that when you look at a mirror, it reverses your image. If you take yourself, you look at the TV screen, and you take another camera and put yourself as the content of it,
yeah,
put it through the TV, you're not altered. It doesn't do a mirror flip.
No, it goes straight through.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that means... whatever the mirror, the filter, the switcher is, television is a strange invention. It's almost like the opposite of the spinning wheel. It's so close to our perception, because our brains are electric, that it can't filter it, can't flip it, like our organic brains can do. So that's a new thing to wonder about.
Wow. I think I'm out of questions for you.
Well, maybe Scott's got something to throw in that comes from our discussion that we're evoking. And I said Scott. I mean Matt.
Yes. Do you have anything to elaborate, Matt?
Well, I'd say to the Bob?
Yeah, but Pat will just repeat it for the mic.
Okay. That the eye works at a frame rate.
That the eye works at a frame rate?
Yeah, yeah.
So that when, like a strobe light, the spokes of a wheel...
So that when the strobe light or the spokes of a wheel...
...are flashed, then it's not actually going backwards, it's just you're seeing so much less of the spokes going forward that when it starts going backwards, it's just at an interval between your frame rates. So it only works at certain speeds, and then when it slows down, it goes backwards faster, and then when it speeds up, it maybe starts to look still and then go fast forward again. So it's related to the ability, the speed at which the eye can perceive individual frames of information. That's
right.
How science explains it.
Did you catch that?
Yeah, our perception is limited, so if it goes faster, it gets a confused image.
Right.
Which is what they say happens under LSD, is that you alter the input mechanism and so you get all these confused imagery. What's interesting, though, that archetypal imagery comes out of it, out of that confusion, and maybe it affects feeling centers, so people feel differently. So it's not just an eye thing. So LSD is better than the spinning wheel because it taps into other parts of your faculty. Proprioceptive feeling faculty, where this spinning wheel is just a very simple visual version of the same kind confusing of the circuits, right?
Yeah.
And I would say what Matt's describing is the after image effect. The after image of you processing it gets confused. What does Matt say to that? Is that a simple way to say?
Yeah, Matt says yes. Yeah.
And the after image is a mirror, an after image of you actually altering things. Which is limited. Your altering is limited. You know, you could say, if you believe in existence other than this dimension, that the real characteristics of this dimension is everything's slow.
Yeah.
And then our brains are slower in dealing with reality than reality is, and then all the other species have different levels of speed within that. But this is slow, this dimension. When you die, you go in another dimension, and you have access to all times or all experiences because it's a faster medium.
Hmm.
And so we create this dimension to slow it down, slow all those other dimensions down to one little place, and kind of cut it off from the simultaneity of spirit and say, okay, here's a place not controlled by spirit, which is simultaneous and high-speed communication. This is real slow, clunky reality. Let's see how the soul interacts with that. And so our cognitive processes always mirror, always replay that slowed down principle. So that's why we're slow. But we're limited.
Yeah.
Because this dimension itself is a limited dimension in relation to other dimensions. So you and then I'm just going to, so when we get to speed it up digital technology, that really plays with our slowness, doesn't it?
Yeah, I guess it does, eh?
And some people say it's the end of the human.
There is, I've heard people talk about out-of-body experience and a time perception change that happens when they're out of body, so to speak.
Which means they're out of this time.
Right.
They tap into the other dimension somehow.
Into the fourth dimension, I understand. Yeah.
They slip into it, and then they can live faster. Whatever they think, they go to, right?
Yeah. Yeah, can perceive thoughts quicker and just understand things quicker. I understand that you can just light in itself and things you see with your eyes. If you have bad eyes, for example, and you have an out-of-body experience, all of a sudden your eyes are back to 20/20.
Right. Now think about, this relates back to what we began with and what's come through as a thread. We are doing that to ourselves when we do TV or telephone.
Right.
I leave my body and I go to another place and I can interact with it. This speed, this fourth dimension of communication technologically, then creates a mania for the person to keep that pace going, and that leads to drug taking. So that's why all across society, in all societies, a massive intaking of drugs way beyond what was done in the 19th century, which had a lot of drugs and that.
Yeah.
And at all ages, beyond any normal society cultural taboos, it is a response to the drug state that media puts us in, and astral projection is like a drug state. You go out of your normal body limitations.
Right.
So the disembodied state that technologically we experience retrieves a fad for astral projection and what's called the New Age. And you can see why that would come back. And therefore, that stuff which was taught in secret societies, it can't be limited to that anymore because people can do it, they need to look at that, experience it, because they're responding, like I said, to the tools around them that give them the experience already.
Right.
So
yeah.
The secret societies were altered by the TV digital age because it technologically simulated what the secret societies would just tell personally. Including drug rituals or shamanism.
Yeah.
So people take drugs from the pharmaceutical level to the whatever you call cocaine and that, recreational drugs. All these different things people consume, you know, enormously, irresponsibly, but they're in a vampire-possessed situation. They're trying to keep up. And if I was president, I would talk about this situation on that level, not say whether we should ban or legalize drugs. Either issue is irrelevant to what people need and are conditioned by, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, a president could talk this way on one level because it would not be a threat. You would not be killing authority or whatever other institutions need it. They wanted people to be stupid or limited or conditioned or hypnotized because the real message is no human being's explanation, no human being being understood No human being, if I was putting this out and people were understanding and acting on it, they'd have to act on it very cautiously and very carefully because the power of the android being around them goes on regardless. So it's not a threat to put the truth out. So media puts out all these old truths, all these old secrets become entertainment, and they can be spread all over the world, and there are no secrets in that sense. Because it's all irrelevant compared to the secret effect of the android meme, which is that it obsolesces all old secrets. The Bible didn't predict this. It didn't predict the fifth horseman. The fifth horseman would be this media plague.
Hmm.
Media actualization.
Yeah.
What?
The fifth horseman, yeah.
Right, you know, the four horsemen.
Yes, of course, yeah.
This is, you can look at the history of our art, and you can see the artist taught Westerners' perspective when the book came in. The book was creating a new eye illusion perspective, so art mirrored it. Then you look at the changes in art after that, you know, the more well-known ones when photography comes in, then Impressionism and studying of light per se came in to counter the photographer's ability to replicate. And then you have all the arts and fads and movements and ideologies of the 20th century all responding to the new technologies.
Yeah.
And then you can see that art's role all along in retrospective was to provide guidance and insight into what was going to become the fifth horseman, the invisible part. So if Christ was the last human and ended the universe, and then now we're acting out this waiting period and see how we handle our sin that he saved and all this stuff. What happened the last 2,000 years? Mass media came in. The manuscript and the printed book and all these things came in. And that life, that cultural life that happened, that science and everything contributed to, creates a situation where the Antichrist comes alive in the form of an android meme. And you can look at the role of art all along the last 2,000 years. Why the artist was important in our cultural memory is it served the role as a shaman or a prophet or the Christ role in reflecting the stages as we built the android meme. Makes total poetic sense and reason why arts went the way they went, because it was all leading to a perspective, a warning about the fifth horseman.
Right.
Which we created, or our extensions created, which would be all that could be done if the humanity ended with Christ. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, I do.
So there's a poetry to technology that's really important, or a perspective understanding it. And now it's so democratic, because we're at a situation now where the whole world can see the world trade towers go down and instantly react, and then have to figure out what the response is to it. I mean, the ESP that we've the fifth horseman is the fact that we've cloned ESP. The natural human faculty of ESP has been cloned.
Hmm.
Everybody's worrying about the cloning of bodies, but we've cloned ESP between humans in our technology. So this means that we're all just now one person deciding whether it can live with anybody else.
So you think that's what makes remote viewing possible?
Well, what's your question? Listen to the words. Is that what is that that makes remote viewing possible?
That everyone thinking on the same wavelength, everyone turning to the same page all at the same time.
Right.
Does that allow someone that's remote viewing to access that information more easily?
It makes remote viewing obsolete because everybody's already doing it.
Remote viewing
is just someone going to a particular place, the Pentagon's files, the biggest filing cabinet in the world, the Pentagon, and finding some information about something, past, present, or future.
Right.
But none of that equals to the non-information situation we live in now, which is the constant processing of quark particles of information that have no beginning, end, or staying power.
Okay.
Right?
Yeah.
So remote viewing is like, that's a technological or a techno version of astral projection. But it, now, if we're all been canceled and equalized in this Android meme one-person situation, we're all Rumpelstiltskin, then as we respond, every previous cultural talent, invention, from astral projection to remote viewing to playing soccer well to anything, probably is synchronistically interacting to lead to when we go to war in June 2003 in Iraq.
Yeah.
Is leading to how humans will deflate that or make a big action out of it. In other words, the interaction among humans now are 6 degrees of separation, and there's a poetry and ESP going on in responding to this beyond what we individually can perceive. And that would be each culture's bias in embodied people, different cultures, different people, how they interact, like this complex bead game, is this constant communication, circulation, and talk show communication.
Right.
That may have a magic and synchronicity that will surprise people. And that could be the second coming.
You think that could be it, eh?
Yeah, in a way, people
work
themselves out of this complexity they've got themselves into.
Yeah. Everyone just kind of open their eyes and work together.
Yeah, but no, actually people close their eyes and keep doing what they narcissistically, obsessively did, but assuming that it has some relevance.
Yeah.
And you can see that in the popular jokes and wisdoms. They go, whatever, let's see, what other phrases, go with the flow. There's all kinds of these phrases that people have the last few 20 years that express this, there's nothing I can do about it, but I'm trying to help.
Doing what I can, yeah.
Yeah, doing what I can.
Yeah.
And at the same time, shrugging, whatever. That's really a very accurate statement of our situation.
Yeah.
So that's why we've retrieved every cultural talent, every cultural ability as content in the media, and we don't know how much it will affect the anarchy of the forums.
Yeah.
Which are the media and the Android meme itself.
Well, thanks a lot, Bob.
Okay, well, I hope
it's been great talking with you.
I hope that gave you a nice nostalgia when human beings.
You sure did.
When human beings used to be able to talk.
Well, thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Okay, so there's nothing else? You figure we've come?
I think we've covered everything that I wanted to know about.
Okay, so
Does Matt have anything to add? No? Yeah, Matt's going to say goodbye to you.
Okay, one thing, Pat, I'd like to... I always ask, are you a Torontonian?
Yes, I am.
And did you... were you born there?
No, I was born in Truro, Nova Scotia, but...
I know the place well.
Do you?
Yeah. I spent many years in Nova Scotia.
Oh, you probably know it better than I do then.
When were you there?
I was ages born till 3 or 4, something like that.
Right.
Then I moved to Montreal and then spent the rest of the time here in Toronto.
And so what's your alibi for employment?
Video.
You work in video?
Yeah.
And let's see... And did you go to university or any school?
I took shiatsu therapy in school for a little bit, and studied musical theater in school. That's basically it.
Yeah, musical theory.
Musical theater.
Theater.
Yes.
What school was that?
Mayfield.
I don't know where that is. Where's that?
It's north of Brampton.
Oh, okay.
It's a theater school. Yeah.
All right, so, and you're in your 20s?
31.
All right.
Coming up, yeah.
Okay, well, I think that's all we need to know.
Great, thanks a lot.
Because that's only your physical body. We've heard a lot about your other body.
That's right, yeah.
From your other bodies during this talk.
Yep.
Okay, great.
Thanks a lot.
Okay, Pat, nice talking to you.